G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and this is episode 123. And just before we get to today's exciting guest, I just wanted to thank very much all those people out there that have been buying my own story, The Fasting Highway, and my book on Amazon. You can get that in both paperback and Kindle. May give you an insight into what it's actually like to live an intermittent fasting lifestyle. And I'll give a bit of a step-by-step guide on how I got started with it and how I made it into a sustainable and successful long-term lifestyle. That's my book, The Fasting Highway, which you can get on Amazon. If you are in Australia or New Zealand, you can get it direct from me too at my website, www.thefastinghighway.com. Okay, let's get on to today's guest. And I'm excited to be revisiting a past guest in episode 7, and that's Charlie Cifarelli. And Charlie is from Long Island, New York. And Charlie's had a very colourful life, and he's also had a very interesting journey with intermittent fasting, which he's going to tell us about in this podcast. And last time we caught up with Charlie, and if you want to go back and listen to that in episode 7 and get his story, he was up to some 365 consecutive clean fasts, and he's now approaching the 1,000 consecutive clean fasts, which is amazing in itself. But I won't spoil the story for you. I'll let Charlie tell it, as he does very well. So ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, welcome to the podcast, Charlie Cifarelli.
Oh, g'day, Charlie, and welcome back to the Fasting Highway.
Hello, Graham.
Great to have you back, mate. And obviously, Charlie, we had Charlie on the podcast very early on in episode 7, some 115 episodes back, Charlie. And obviously, a lot of water's gone under the bridge since then. But what we might do is just have a quick recap of your fasting journey. How you told us in episode 7 that you came to fasting and it didn't work out for you the first time, and then you came back to it. And then the last time we spoke, you'd got up to 365 clean fasts. So let's just pick it up a bit from where you sort of started and now where you're at now.
Okay, sounds good, Graham and listeners. So I came to the Fasting Highway, and last time we did a talk, I had 365 consecutive clean fasts. And it's changed my life. If we go back to episode 7, I came in the 240s, and through fasting, I got down to my high school weight of the 170s, low 170s. It's been a complete life change for me, Graham. Everything has changed, both outside and inside. As we discussed back then, my blood work is wonderful now. HDLs are high, LDLs are low, C-reactive protein is low, PSA, I believe that's what it's called. Everything is better than check. And now I also wear a smartwatch, so I know that my resting pulse is always in the low 50s. Graham, I've had a problem with food from as early as I can remember. From 8 years old, eating cupcakes, Hostess cupcakes, and shoving them in my mouth, to potato chips. So it's been a lifelong battle, and I've tried everything under the sun to stay ahead of the food monster, I like to call it at times. So I tried working out, lifting weights. I tried burning more calories than I took in. I tried, you know, eating only protein. I tried fruitarian diet, vegetarian diets. Everything I tried had one problem. I would consume too much food for what my metabolism could burn, and I was hopelessly hooked on food. And finally, At 246 pounds, I was morbidly obese. Life wasn't looking good, full of pains, feeling sorry for myself. I finally made a decision when I discovered the intermittent fasting on the internet. And I said, I got to do something. And what I did, Graham, which is not like me, I said, I've got to expose myself. I literally had to expose myself and put a picture of myself and what I had done in the kitchen behind closed doors on the internet. And the shame and the guilt I had for that, and I don't tell anybody else to do that. That's what I had to do for me, because I made a decision I was going to stick with this. And I came on the fasting highway, originally started from Jin's group and then jumped onto the fasting highway and felt a great group of people here. And I connected.
Yeah, that's great, Charlie. And you had so many NSVs and those health benefits that you talked about. I mean, so many crazy things as well, like hair regrowth, all those things you mentioned. And you talked about the fact that you used to do a lot of journaling, Charlie, with your fasting journey. Is journaling something that's still part of your life now with your fasting?
I live by the journal. I believe for me, if I fail to plan, I plan to fail. So basically, I have a journal. At the top of the journal, it has each day's date on it, what number fast I'm working on. Because remember, I take this one fast at a time, not a week at a time, a month at a time. I put down my goals. I put down how long I'm going to fast for. And then I write every night what I eat in that open window. And I have to do that for me, Graham. And it works out really well that way, because I have to be honest. There's no chance of me getting this a second time. I believe if I get out back into the ocean again as a shark eating again nonstop, there'll be no coming back in. So I take it that serious. And I generally like to shoot for 22 to 23 hours a day to fast, but I don't set my zero app at that. I set it 20 hours, which is easy for me to do. I do sleep 8 hours, and I generally eat every night around 5 or 6 o'clock. So it's second nature at this point.
And has your eating style changed much, Charlie, over the last sort of couple of years, or are you pretty consistent in what you do?
You know, I've tried different things, and I find what works and what doesn't work for me. For me, Graham, I have to have a full meal. I really do. And my body requires that energy source. So I really do well with healthy fats, vegetables. I don't need a ton of protein. I know a lot of people ask me about that. I don't. I mean, maybe if I was a younger man and I was working physical labor every day, but to do what I do every day and exercise just a few times a week, I don't need to do that. But what is important to me is this. I still don't have the ability, Graham, to have a long window. I don't like it. I generally love living in a fasted zone. So what does that mean? That means once I decide to break a fast, I'm focused. I'm not talking to anybody on the phone. I'm sitting down. I'm relaxed. The TV's not on. And I'm nourishing my body. And if that takes an hour, if it takes an hour and a half, whatever that time is, when I'm done eating, I start my next fast. I don't need to keep the window open to see if I got room for more stuff or do some additional grazing. I don't need to. And the other thing I will tell you that has really helped me tremendously is my table etiquette. Early on, you know, I didn't know portions. I know portions today. Matter of fact, my eyes are a measuring cup and my eyes can also weigh stuff. But basically, everything I'm going to eat is already on the dining room table. I'm not going in and out of cabinets. And I know we don't have to do it with this lifestyle, but I do take accountability for what I'm eating in the volume. So if something says, let's say it's cashews and 1 ounce is a serving, I know what an ounce of cashews looks like if I want to put it on my salad. That doesn't mean 6 ounces of cashews, because I don't want to get myself caught up not feeling well. And I have seen and felt, being here long enough, that my body does really well with the right amount of food, and too much, I don't do well. That answers the question.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it, Charlie. And obviously, comparison, as they say, is the thief of joy. And I think it's important that for a long-term intermittent faster, you really need to find your own niche and your own food style or what works for your particular body. I mean, what works for Charlie Cifarelli might not necessarily work for someone else per se. And so it's really important that you need to find that sort of niche, don't you, Charlie, in your own groove.
Yes. Yes, it really does. And I will tell you this, Graham, to simplify for people that are listening to this, okay? I've done all the research, okay? At the end of the day, I want to have as close to a normal lifestyle when it comes to food as possible. So alternate day fasting for me would not work, okay? I've tried only vegetables. We laughed about it last time we spoke when Joe Cross made a big deal about coming to America and juicing all the vegetables. I went out and bought the best juicer, and I tried that before I hit the fasting highway. That didn't work. Only protein, that doesn't work. Only keto, that doesn't work. And I've talked about this on your page, the Fasting Highway. I can do numbers of days in a row of eating a plant-based diet. I like the way I feel on that. But that in its entirety doesn't work for me either at this point. It may in the future, but it doesn't, because I cannot be that vigorous all the time. If it comes to some cream in my coffee when the window opens and that's what I'm desiring, that's where I'm at that day. I think that I finally found what works for me. And the most important thing is I have become compassionate to myself. You know, I've always been able to feel for others and understand and feel for animals, but I always put myself on the back burner. And I really went years without really looking in the mirror, Graham, and saying, you know, who is that guy in the mirror? You know, who is that guy? I've really, through the fasting, have got to introduce myself to myself. And you know what? I'm okay with myself now. And how do I know this is working? I get the best 8 hours a night sleep. I have zero anxiety. I don't worry about tomorrow. I don't spend a bunch of time regretting what happened yesterday. And in the morning, when it's time to get up, and Graham, we have a lot of dogs here. So, I mean, I get up with a lot of dogs. When I put my feet on the ground in the morning, I'm ready to start my day. And I'm really happy to be where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I think that's really important too, Charlie, all those sorts of things that you mentioned. And that comes down to mindset, doesn't it? But I know you mentioned that first time you came to fasting some years ago now, and then it didn't sort of pan out for you. And then you came back with a renewed mindset and a new focus and discipline that you're examining now. And you're now heading up towards that 1,000 fast mark. 1,000 clean fast is quite phenomenal.
And yes.
That's
yes.
Something to celebrate in itself. So just tell us how you feel about your whole journey now coming up to that 1,000 clean consecutive fast. I mean, that's something special.
Graham, I got goosebumps right now because it's something that when my mother saw me in 2019, before I joined the fasting highway, I hadn't seen my mother because she lives in Florida. And she hadn't seen me for a couple of years, and she did not recognize me from a distance. She actually asked when I was coming to her front door, she was outside, is that me? Charles, is that you? I have come so far, and I really have the right mindset for me. You know, Graham, we're hit with a ton of information these days, whether it's physical therapists, whether it's nutritionists on TikTok, Instagram models, all this stuff we're hit with, okay? But in my heart of hearts, I know what works for me, and that is time-restricted eating, as some call it, intermittent fasting. And the other thing is, I don't compare. Like you said, comparison's the thief of joy. I'll give you an example. So I do push-ups, and I do some pull-ups, and I hear guys tell me that they do, you know, 500 or 1,000 push-ups a week. Graham, I don't need to do that. I do a couple sets of 50 push-ups. I do some pull-ups. I do some curls on the chin-up bar. I do weightless squats, and I'm able to get as much muscle as I need. I mean, at 57 years old, which I'm proud to be 57 and feel and look as good as I do, and I know that's pretty vain to say that, but I mean, I've earned it. It's incredible. So what I have found is less is more. Less is more. So maybe a lot of people hit it harder than me with the training and they got gym memberships. Well, first of all, I like my freedom. And I found a way that I don't have to leave my house. And it worked out during the pandemic that in my own home, I could do all the exercising I want. The other thing I got to tell people is I enjoy a spin bike. And it gives me a good zone to get on there and hear some tunes from the 80s or whatever I want to listen to. But doing 10,000 steps or 6 or 7,000, whatever you can do on your own property or on a sidewalk, will get the same desired result to get you moving. And remember to get out of the mindset. We're not in a calorie burning club. A lot of people in training, they're thinking about burning calories. I'm not thinking that. I'm thinking about moving my body, assisting all my lymph nodes so they all drain. I'm thinking about getting blood circulation and getting in the zone. And it is mindset. When I feel good, I know my metabolism and everything's working 100%. And when you feel good, you look in the mirror and you have that confidence. And that is really the true test of how you're doing. What do you think about yourself? Not Instagram, but what do you think about yourself?
Yeah, I think that's really important. And self-care, and as we talk about a lot, Charlie, you know, you've got to learn to love yourself first. And I think, you know, when you are a heavy person or you're an obese person, your self-esteem is pretty low and sometimes you don't have a great opinion of yourself. And I think fasting for me has certainly given me two things. It's given me a sense of calm or inner peace that I talk about where I feel very calm within. And I find fasting does that for me. But the other thing is it's boosted my self-confidence about the way I feel about myself, about when I enter the room, how I present myself to other people. And I think that's probably come for you too over the years.
Graham, you said a lot there, and that really is it, Graham. That's what the fasting does. I feel comfortable. I'm no longer in life on the outside looking in. Graham, when you're not at ease with yourself, the general public can tell. You know, we're in a pandemic now. And although we're coming out of it, if I go to the supermarket and I'm in the produce, that's where I spend most of my time in the produce, my fellow human beings are shoulder to shoulder with me. Now, they're not even considering that there's still a pandemic on. People generally want to be in my company today. And that was not, and why I bring it up, it certainly wasn't the case when I was a grazer or I was eating sugar until 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, we have something called Barnes and Nobles, Graham, and it's a bookstore out here. And I like to grab a cup of coffee back when I was eating and hit their bakery department there and then kind of look for books. You know, I would turn the corner and I would startle people. Because I wasn't at ease. My aura wasn't good. And that is not the case anymore. Matter of fact, you know, besides people telling me, because I rescue a lot of dogs, this dog's a biter, or this dog's not friendly, that, listen, that the dogs know immediately I'm okay. I'm a friend, not a foe. And then I'm connecting with my fellow human being. And, you know, that's why I'm being invited to so many of these podcasts, I guess, because people like to hear my story. And me personally, I think that food for me was one of the most horrible, insidious illnesses I could have had. Because for years I was dying behind closed doors. For years I wasn't part of the family. For years there was no photos of me and I avoided any cameras. For years I didn't like to go to social functions. And for years, Graham, I had to pre-eat before I went to dinner sometimes because I didn't eat, you know, like a gentleman. And food owned me. And today it doesn't happen. Today I am so clear of where I'm going and I'm so focused that no cookie, no box of Oreos, no buttered rolls, no cinnamon rolls could ever give me what I got with the abstinence in between meals. And I may add this. What I have figured in the, 660 some odd fast since we did our last interview. Here's what I figured, Graham. You know, back then, I would have a Thanksgiving style dinner and I would put a dessert in there of some type. I don't do that no more. I don't do it, Graham. I don't do it because you know what? I realize it changes the way I feel and there's never enough of it. So for me, even if it is a dessert, I'll give you an example. Even watermelon, which I really love, I never remember myself eating watermelon, a small cup of it. I wanted, you know, it'd start with a quarter of watermelon. I'd want a lot of it. Same thing with ice cream. So for me, it's easier to be 100% sugar-free. Some foods don't work with me. And I know that they don't. And French fries don't work with me. Bread don't work with me. Pasta don't work with me. So I really have to keep it really simple. And something I did want to mention tonight, Graham, that I didn't know, but I was getting some aches and pains. And my diet is pretty darn clean right now. If I eat unhealthy, I was in California recently doing some podcast, and I had to try it because it's got fame to it. One of our fellow members took me to In-N-Out. I really liked the guy, Joe. And I felt awful after that meal, Graham. I felt really, really bad after the French fries and the bread on the hamburger. It just didn't work for me. And I don't recommend, there's no punishing fasting, but it had affected my system so bad that I could not eat. So this is not fasting. This is, I could not eat. And I wound up with the longest fast I ever had, 84 hours. And that was simply because I felt so ill to my stomach after being clean and eating foods like cucumbers and cucumber, with mustard on it or different things that were real healthy for me. It really backfired. So that was an opening for me to really say, I've changed. My insides do not like that food anymore. So we have some no's. There is no sugar in dessert form. So, and I say that so that if I want some blueberries in my salad, that's a yes. But I generally am not knocking down oranges and stuff like that, that I feel that I will eat compulsively, even in my window. So I avoid stuff like that. I want to eat like a gentleman. I want to eat on my refrigerator. I put it on the fasting highway, dine like a cat. And as we all know, cats really dine. They're really neat the way they do that. And that's what I do now. And you always say it. You have a food worthy plate, a meal worthy plate. Say it for me, Graham, your way of saying it.
Window worthy plate. Yeah. I mean, and as I think it's the natural progression too, Charlie, the longer we go in this fasting lifestyle, I think we learn to eat in a more mindful manner, which you mentioned there, eat like a gentleman. I like that. And I think that's so true that you sort of take your time, you savor food. I mean, I know when I was morbidly obese, food was just volume. So I just stuff it down. I never really even savored it. I never tasted it. And now I love the taste of food. I love to savor it. I love to take my time. I love to sit down. It's almost a theatrical experience, my window now. And that's how I really love it. And I love to make the whole thing an experience every day. That's my one time a day where I think that I have to really take care of myself. I have to take care of my body. But over the years, Charlie, have you found yourself becoming more of an intuitive faster too and being really in tune with your hunger signals?
Oh, absolutely. Great. You know, I know the difference, Graham, between head hunger and a real hunger, okay? And I learned this in fasting. See, your brain needs calories. Your brain, I think, burns 20 to 25% of your total caloric intake. So although your stomach is telling you you're hungry, your brain needs the fuel. So I have a checklist. If I'm all of a sudden 17 hours into a fast and I'm hungry as can be, I say, did I have a disturbing phone call? Am I a little stressed about something? And if I look deep enough, there's something that's unfinished or something that is transferring into me wanting to eat. Now, Graham, I wouldn't be coming up to 1,000 fast if I don't learn some tricks, okay? And I wish I knew these things earlier on. And these are things that work for me. I've learned how to deep breathe. And that has really given me a relaxed state like as no other. And for people that don't know how much about deep breathing, they can go on YouTube and just start. Wim Hof has a beginner's deep breathing where you do 30 deep breaths and there's a retention of a minute, minute and a half. I do deep breathing. I take daily cold showers. And these are things that help me stay awake and clear and not drift off into a negative mindset, that I'm always close to my goals. Because remember, I'm not going to be motivated every day, Graham. I don't have you doing an interview with me every day. It's been a long time since we've done one. And, you know, I go periods of time without talking to another fellow faster. So I have to have things that are in my life that are non-negotiable, that will deliver me to my goal every day. So deep breathing. I really enjoy cold showers. It really is great on the inflammation. I write everything down that I need to. That's important for me. And I do an inventory if things are piling on top of me. What can I do right now? And what can I do? What can I put off till tomorrow? You know, life has a way of giving us second chances, and it's called tomorrow. And that is really important for people to know that. You see, people don't realize how important a day's difference makes. You might be having a tough day. You might have got out of bed. You're not feeling great. And when you're not feeling great, it seems like it's multiplied. Well, know this. Most likely, you're going to get a second chance. So you'll have tomorrow. And tomorrow is a whole nother opportunity to do this. So I believe all I have to do each day is deliver myself to a clean fast until my window opens. And I got a 99% chance of having a great day.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic, Charlie. Really positive. And we've got to be positive about ourselves and tell us that. And if things don't go quite to plan sometimes, and like you said, tomorrow's a new day. And I see so many people beating themselves up and say, oh, you know, I went out and I had a pizza, or I did this with my friends and I overate, and now I'm going to, you know, do this massive long fast to make up for it. It's like a revenge fasting, you know what I mean? And I say to people, look, just go back to what you normally do. I mean, habits are all about, I mean, for me, fasting is about habits, right? And it takes a while to form new habits. So when you sort of break a habit, and then if you do it once, it's not so bad because you can get back to it the next day. It's when you break that habit consistently and then you go back to your old habits. That's the problem. So the trick is when you do have a slip in your habit, don't make it two slips. Make it one and then get back to what you were doing. But you say people gravitate towards you when you're at the produce section and that sort of thing. Do many people sort of ask you about fasting now, Charlie, or look for some advice from you?
You know, I will say this. I think it's a personal thing with people that they don't come out and say that, but they will say, my goodness, when they stand next to me, they will give me compliments and they'll say, my goodness, you look really, really good. You know, pictures sometimes don't do justice when you're in shape. But I do get compliments and people do inquire. And I believe, you know, I'm not going to be one with a loudspeaker and this is the way, because you know what? Any way can work. Somebody might eat 250 calories six times a day and they exercise and they look fantastic. That might be their system that they believe in. So it's attraction rather than promotion. So basically what I'm going to get is someone that has tried everything and they might inquire, what am I doing to look this good? What am I doing that's different? Now, Graham, here's something that's also important. I can't stress this enough to the listeners. In this program or any type of weight loss that you're attempting, you can become skinny fat. And during the pandemic, I even noticed that for me. I was getting on the spin bike and going to town on this thing. And I noticed I was burning muscle tissue. And although I was going down on the scale, even lower than the ones, I got down to 160s. I didn't look good with my shirt off. I was literally burning my muscle tissue. We don't want to do that. I don't care if we're 25 or 85. The goal is to add muscle tissue for a few reasons. Muscle tissue does a fantastic job of burning extra calories. It keeps our posture in check. It keeps our gait, our walk, our back. So we want to have muscle tissue. And if we're not careful and we get guilt-ridden because we ate a pizza or whatever we did, and we exercise the town, that is not what we're looking to do. Small, consistent movements. As we all know, we have felt bad enough with our eating. We don't need to beat ourselves up on top of that. So I think you're exactly right. I know you're exactly right. If you found that you went out and you had this pizza and you didn't follow the protocol that you set out to do, first, get honest with us. Tell us you need some help. Go on and make a post so we can help you. This is a we situation. It's not a me. It's a we. And Graham, I will tell you this. I think one of our group members posted this wonderful looking cake. I mean, I tell you, I looked at this cake about three times. I scrolled past it. I went back. I looked at it a few times. And they were proud of themselves. And I was proud of them too, that they had made it during their window. They didn't try anything. But I said to myself, I don't know. I wouldn't do that to myself today. If I go to a barbershop and sit down, waiting on somebody else to get a haircut, I'm going to get a haircut eventually. Even if I don't need one, I'm going to wind up with a haircut. So I don't put myself in positions that I'm going to make a boo-boo like that, because I am human and I didn't get here by eating a few extra calories. I got to the fasting highway by eating like there was no tomorrow. And I used to say, you know, when I worked for the Department of Corrections, and we had a death row, I used to say, I was eating like I was going to the electric chair in the morning. And I don't want to eat like that again. I mean, these guys are giving the last meal. And I mean, I don't want that in my life like that. And my approach to food has completely changed, because I can play the tape forward now. Charlie, how are you going to feel if you have an extra portion? Charlie, how are you going to feel if you keep this window open a little bit longer? And I know I had that, in and out experience, and that was enough of a convincer for me. And again, I didn't have sugar. I really didn't eat that. Thinking about it, I didn't eat that much more than a regular person would eat, but my system can't handle that no more. It just doesn't want it.
Yeah, you're right. Sometimes when our food tastes change, and over the years we gravitate to that high quality food. And a big shout out to Joe there in California, by the way. He's a good friend of the Fasting Highway. I know sometimes those experiences, Charlie, when you have them, they're a great reminder, aren't they? It's like I was recently in New Zealand and I caught up with a few buddies I hadn't seen for 6 years. And we had a few drinks, and a few drinks led to a few more drinks than I normally have. I mean, I don't hardly drink these days. And as you know, I was a party boy in my day, and yes, I used to go pretty hard at the ball. And anyway, I sort of had a mini flashback. Next thing, I had an espresso martini in my hand. But I remember the next day just how bad I felt. I just felt terrible. And I had to climb up this mountain the next day. And so yes, here I am walking up this mountain with this banging head with a hangover. And I hadn't had a hangover in many years. And I said to myself, what a great reminder of why I don't do that anymore and why I seek high-quality foods. And I'm of the opinion now, Charlie, with a fasting lifestyle, if you are going to fast all day, then what I'm going to eat in my window has to be worthy. Or it's not going to fly. Simple as that. And that might sound, you know, pretty rigid to some people, but for me, I like to say I eat what makes me feel my greatest. I don't eat whatever my mind wants. I eat what I feel makes me feel my greatest and what's going to run my body to its optimum. And I guess you feel the same way.
Graham, you said it perfectly. That's really what people have to understand. You know, I will say this. I'm 24 plus years sober, so I'm alcohol free. And I believe, without trying to push anybody, when they come to a spot in their life where the body craves the good stuff, they're not going to want to do anything that doesn't make them feel that good. So alcohol, the sugar and alcohol, all that, it does set you back. I mean, and I am not telling anybody not to drink. I don't tell anybody what to do, but I'm just suggesting that when you think about it, your window opens and you got to utilize this time wisely. Now, Graham, remember, you got thousands of that. I think the Fasting Highway has over 6,000 people on it now, currently, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we are hitting a vast amount of human beings out there, and we're not all the same. And that's important. You know, some people came to the Fasting Highway or come here because they might have some stubborn couple pounds they want to lose. Some people may be like myself or you that are obese and really have to follow this closely. Some other people just want the freedom of taking a break from food. I don't know what you call it. I think the smallest amount of fast that we consider a fast is 16 hours, but maybe they want to do a 16-hour fast to take a break from food. Or we have people that are really diligent and they want to do alternate day fasting because they feel as though that gives them more of a zest for life and it gives them more living time. So we're all unique and we all have different needs. But if you're anything like me, I ate with two hands. I drank with two hands. There was never enough sugar. There was never enough carbohydrates. And I was always looking over the counter to make sure I was getting a big enough portion. You know, we have something here in the U.S. called Chipotle. And I never wanted them to run me through the line real quick. I want to go slow and make sure this thing is heaping. Graham, I got to tell you, more is actually less because it just doesn't work for my system. And matter of fact, my body doesn't want that. You know, it became big somewhere in the 80s and 90s in the United States. We got these buffets. I can't even remember having a nice, deep conversation with anybody at a buffet. All I remember is seeing the backs of my friends going up to get more of whatever they were getting. So I want to tell you, the Fasting Highway has given me lifelong friends. Went out to California. I went to a dinner with Joe. It lasted a long time. We were in no rush. We conversed, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience outside of the In-N-Out. The In-N-Out was because I had to see what it was all about because the In-N-Out has the airport right there. But we went to a place that he likes, and I wound up liking it also. The service was perfect. They weren't in a rush, and I got to see what the Fasting Highway can do in action. Now, here's something to think about. Over the years, I've tried a lot of diets, and every diet hit the road when I went on the road. So, you know, I hear people, they go on cruises or they go away, and then the diet goes away. Not the intermittent faster that's on the Fasting Highway, because I got a few things that are working for me. I got a group that I check in with. I'm always reading the post, so I have support. I have a journal, and I have a window. And that is not going to change whether I'm in California, New Mexico, or in my home. And I was able to prove to myself with doing all these out-of-state traveling podcasts, I can maintain and even come in lighter. Matter of fact, I found that when I'm on the road, they all have good hotel gyms. I found that myself able to exercise and get some more steps in. So that has worked out. So I've tried this intermittent fasting in every capacity, and we'll get to the big one about, you know, STAR, but it has showed me it's evergreen. It works in any situation.
Yeah, we will get to STAR in a moment. And of course, we're talking about STAR, the wonder dog, the greatest dog that ever lived. Charlie brought back from the brink, and as the story goes, and you heard it in episode 7, shot on the streets in New York by a police officer in the face. Charlie rescued STAR and nursed it back to health, and the story is amazing. We'll get Charlie to talk about that more in a second. But, Charlie, I just wanted to wind up the fasting bit of the podcast with the maintenance side of things. I mean, you mentioned there now that you're in firmly in maintenance, and I think people, when they get to maintenance, for me, it's a new mindset altogether from actually losing the weight, totally different. Because it's a lifelong thing then that you're going to keep the weight off, and it's a different challenge. So I always say to people, treat it as a different challenge and get a new mindset going. And I like to say to people, think about it as being in a goal range rather than a goal weight. Because when you have a certain number, I want to be 188, that's my goal weight. And then you get there, and then you think to yourself, oh, if I go over 190 or something, it's going to be horrific. But I think if you give yourself some grace and you give yourself that little bit of a broad range, and we mentioned when we were talking, you sort of give yourself about a 10-pound range. Just run us through your maintenance protocol and things you do to keep yourself in check during maintenance.
Okay, Graham, like I said earlier, I need and I know my body very well now. I feel completely, completely digested and empty from food. Somewhere it approaches maybe the 16th hour. By the 20th hour, I am now have tapped into autophagy, the word they like to use. I know that I'm burning stored fat and I'm burning old cells. I know that that food that I had the day before is completely gone. So I like to at least get my 20 hours in. And I don't operate with a stopwatch, although I have my Zero app on my phone, which keeps me honest and keeps me accountable. And once I break and that thing turns green, I can open my window. But I open my window under a few circumstances. If the dogs are coming in and out, it's not the right time to eat. The house is not settled down. It's not time to eat. It's not time to eat. I will push a little bit further till I have my spot with Jen so we can eat. The other thing I want to say is this. Early on, Graham, I drank a ton of black coffee. And I don't do that anymore. I don't need to push off this head hunger. It's not there no more. So my beverage of choice right now is water. I really, really enjoy water. And I think it makes such a difference in my complexion. I think it makes such a difference in my joints. And it's just a clean feeling. So I want to get my 20 hours in. And usually we eat anywhere from 22, sometimes 23, anywhere in there, it's time to eat. And again, I don't watch a stopwatch, but I'm generally done eating, Graham, you know, and winding up in an hour and 15 minutes, 45 minutes sometimes. And then when I'm done, I hit the button, I'm done. And I'm in the fasting mode again. And I generally like to wait at least 5 hours before I go to sleep. So if I'm done eating at 6, I go to bed at 11. And it allows me to go to bed digested. And I got this down to a science now. If I eat earlier in the day, I can't sleep on a stomach that's digested more than 5 hours. I'll be restless. So I know now what it takes to bring me to bedtime. The other thing that's really important for people just coming to this lifestyle is if they start getting hungry and they find that that kitchen is really talking to them, the refrigerator, get out of the kitchen. Go outside. Go in your backyard. Go out front. Deep breathe. Read. Meditate. And again, I love the cold showers. So there are tools. We don't have to white knuckle this. We didn't come to the fasting highway to live in misery. Okay? We have found better ways to get through the fasting. You know, we have to always remind people, and we got some great, the people, moderators on the fasting highway to answer a lot of questions. So a lot of people are really thinking that they're missing out by not having cream in their coffee, or not having stevia, whatever they do. They have to, in my opinion, I don't tell anybody what they have to do, but they have to get away from that mindset and take themselves away from any food and get themselves in the process of living. And even something as mindless as going outside and picking some weeds or organizing a closet, the time goes by and you got something done. Use that energy. And it really is sometimes neurotic energy for me early on. And I got a lot done. You know, Graham, I want to say this. What did I accomplish from 365 fast to coming up onto my 1,000th? You know, I'm like everybody else. I've lived a life. We all have unique situations. And I always said I'm going to write a book. Well, I wrote a book, Graham. I didn't publish it yet. I'm getting real close to publishing, but I wrote a 102,000 page book. These are some of the things I've accomplished in my fasting.
Yeah, I mean, you're an incredible guy, Charlie, and your story is remarkable. I recently heard you on a podcast, and a host described it as a R-rated version of Forrest Gump. I mean, you've been all over the place in your life, and it's really interesting. I'm really looking forward to your book, and we're going to talk about your book in a minute, but let's talk about Star. I mean, I was so sad when I heard that you lost Star, and I just can't even imagine and begin to imagine how traumatic that was for you. And just run us by what that period was like for you, Charlie, and how fasting was the one thing you sort of held on to through that period as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Grant, for those words. Well, as a lot of our people know, Star was shot, and I became her adopted dad after a lot of work. And they gave her no chance of recovery. Matter of fact, headlines all over the world, the Daily Mail news, that said she died. She's in Wikipedia, Star, S-T-A-R, the dog. And I nursed her back to health, and she survived. And she was like a child to me, Graham. I did everything I could so that she had a good life. And in turn, she gave me a really good life. And we went to Alzheimer's events. We gave hope to families, although there's no survivor's walk when it comes to Alzheimer's. We went to cancer walks. We went to universities to talk about journalism. And then on February 19, 2021, she had been battling cancer, and she was making a comeback. She was doing okay. The tumor had really gotten smaller, and I went to take her, to put her in the bathtub with Jen, and she died. She died in my arms. It was as strong as she came and survived, she left. And it was the hardest thing that I ever had to deal with, Graham, because I felt like I died. And all that I did with her, I felt like was gone. I felt like, what do I do now? What do I do with myself? Because, you know, she was an internet sensation. We were so busy always giving talks. We did talks for every type of situation. We did talks to people suffering from alcohol, drug addiction, food, you name it. We went to places. We went to monasteries. We went all over, and she died. And, you know, for people that want to see the luckiest dog that ever lived came back to life is on the internet. It's on YouTube. So she's gone. And I never thought about breaking my fast. It was the only thing that I was in control of. I had no control of nothing in my life, but I had control of what I put in my mouth, and I put nothing in my mouth. I allowed myself to feel. I said, for one time in my life, you're going to have to feel every bit of this morning. You're going to have to grieve this sensational life of this dog. You know, Graham, I don't like to feel like that. I mean, I can handle some feelings, but that was some pretty intense feelings. And I mean, I'm 57. There's been a lot of losses. But human beings have been able to say goodbye. Human beings have been able to visit, and they're going. But this dog impacted my life so much because she connected me to my fellow human beings. She might have been a dog, but she really connected me to humans that were suffering. She would know if somebody had cancer. So people would tell me, they'd say, I had a recent cancer diagnosis. Did your dog know something's wrong with me? I've had people from all walks of life, and I talked about this in the last podcast, from homeless people to judges to everything you could imagine in between, that felt something for this dog because she's the ultimate. I mean, people that don't like horse racing, and I'm not a fan of any hunting or racing, but again, that's my opinion. But who doesn't like a winner, an underdog winning? Right now, we had this Rich Strike from 80-1 win the race, and it makes you just go, you know what? There's hope in every underdog story, and Star was the ultimate underdog, a homeless man's dog, adopted from a shelter. It was abused from the Bronx, New York, then on the street with this homeless guy that had his own issues, shot in the head and sent to a hospital with no chance to live. And it really has changed my life. And you know what? It's made me from being a scorekeeping transactional businessman to human being. I used to be a human doing. I was always doing something, doing. I'm a human being. I'm present in the moment. I don't live in fear. I could smile, I can get mad too, and I could take care of myself. And I could take care of those without a voice because I got past my own needs. And today I'm as free as I've ever been, Graham. And that summarizes what that dog has done. And, you know, people tell me, Charlie, it's only a dog. I was in California and I stopped by. I always wanted to stop in Beverly Hills. I wanted to meet a police chief. I know they give out these coins, these challenge coins. And I just told him, listen, I'm Star the dog's dad, and here's her information. And he said, well, the police chief doesn't usually, he's very busy, doesn't let, you know, people just come in without a meeting, this or that. I got to see the police chief, and we talked about the story. And for those that don't think there are a full comeback, Star was shot by the police, and they put her in a recent issue of the police magazine, the Blue Magazine, out of New York, and it talks about her plight. So even the police have rallied behind Star. I don't know anybody that hasn't rallied behind her, because just like the story of Rich Strike coming back with no chance, Star came back on every obstacle. And I think she lives by my favorite motto, life does give us a second chance by giving us tomorrow. And she was a tomorrow liver. And that's yeah. Grandma. Wow.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. People want to follow Star's, you know, past journey and that sort of thing. They can look it up on Wikipedia or they can follow it on YouTube. Star had her own Facebook group, 100,000 people or something, Charlie, in the Facebook group.
Star of the New York Pitbull. Star of the New York, and she wasn't even a pitbull. The media named her a pitbull. We had her DNA done. She was a bulldog. She was a Stafford, 100% Staffordshire Terrier. But look, I don't get into all this, Graham. I mean, when me and Jen wanted a dog, we got a little 20-pound Jack Russell. We've had more problems with him at a dog park getting kicked out than taking Star or any of our other dogs anywhere. I mean, so we've had good experiences, but we are a loving family, and we understand that dogs do get abused, and there are really good people out there that adopt dogs that don't have good outcomes because the dog has a history, or some of them, they put their face, the dog bites. We're understanding people. We're all in this life that comes with no instructions, but we try to find what works. And I think that through fasting, we get to find who we are. Who is our authentic self? Who's our true self? You know, I talk to people that fast. They get back to their beliefs. They re-enter the church after being gone many years. Or they do something spiritual. They pick up an old hobby that they had put away years ago. They start bowling again. Life gets back in session. And that's what we're here for. This is not a calorie and diet club. This is a living club. And quite frankly, if you're busy counting calories and figuring this and how many you got to burn, you're doing it wrong. I, because of my journalism, just keep track of everything. Because I think that later on, Graham, people will want to read some of these notebooks because it'll help them. And I really, at some point, would be open to sharing some of my journey and taking out pages and putting them on the internet so others can get some hope and some direction for what's worked for me.
Yeah, I think that's important, Charlie. And as you mentioned there, you've written a book, and your book's more about your life, Charlie. I mean, you've had an amazing life. I mean, I got to know you a little bit through this sort of medium now, and you're an incredible guy. You've done all sorts of things. You've been at the low ebbs of life. You know, you've had addiction issues. You've come through that. You've started a business from scratch, a waste business, grew it into a successful company. You've done so many amazing things and met so many amazing people in your life. You've worked in corrections. You worked with death row prisoners. Just incredible. So just run us through a bit about your book, what it's called, and when's it going to be out, because I'll be the first person to hit the buy button.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Graham. My book is called 14th and 2nd, and it takes place in two places. It's where Star was shot, reported to have died, and came back to life. Surprisingly, 14th and 2nd is where I used to buy drugs when I had a drug problem as a young man in my late teens and early 20s. So the corner serves two purposes. It's a crossroads of where stuff ended and came, and a miracle happened. So it's 14th and 2nd. My book deals with, it starts us right in 1969 in Woodstock, going to Woodstock, and my dad's 64 Impala convertible and with our dog Ringo, and it goes into that life, and it goes into my earliest memories of when I didn't eat like a regular kid, back to when I was at school getting extra food, always trying to cram extra cupcakes in my mouth. And it goes through that. And it goes through how I always didn't feel like I fit in. I was always on the outside looking in. And I tried everything. I tried sports. I tried paper routes. I tried it all. So I moved through that. And I work in the nightclubs. And I wind up drinking with two hands. And that doesn't work. And then, of course, you know, it wasn't hard to have some injuries and pick up some pills and get into a full-blown addiction with that. And that's all been arrested. It's all behind me. And I wound up, after that, going to work for the Department of Corrections. And I would have a colorful career, 3 maximum security prisons. I would see it all. I'd be part of it all. And the thing that really has stuck out at me is all the death row visits that I did between families and their loved ones, because they have loved ones too. And just being a fly on a wall, having to oversee that and realizing that things don't always turn out the way that we want them to. Whether it's the victims of a crime don't get what they're looking for after the inmate is executed, whether the inmate told me that their own will and their addiction got them right where they did willingly deserve to be. And I got through all that, and I thought, Graham, that if only I had a business and I made money, it would make me feel whole. And I did that. I started the trash business from scratch, and it became a big trash business. And it was very successful. And I bought every purchase I thought that would make me feel better. And it was the biggest letdown I've ever had. Now, granted, if you have no food and you are living in a $9 million house, which is a bridge, you're living outside, the first chance you get to come inside and eat 3 meals a day, if you're not a faster, you're grateful for that. But by the time I got to the point where I had this business running, I had a lot of good meals, a lot of good clothes, a lot of fancy cars, and a lot of big houses. And it didn't change my insides. I was still someone that hadn't accepted myself on life's terms with myself. And ultimately, Star did a lot of the work. That was in 2012 when she was shot, and I rescued her in 2013. But until I stopped eating over my emotions and had discipline and grew some emotional muscle and looked in the mirror and started to love myself and take care of myself, you would not be interviewing me today, because I'd have nothing to offer. You can't transmit what you don't have. I mean, I certainly can't help anybody if I don't have anything. So that's why when you're on a plane, they say the adult puts the oxygen on first, and then you put oxygen on other people. And I hope that gave you a good rundown of the questions you asked me, Graham.
Yeah, thanks very much, Charlie. I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been catching up with you today. And we should also mention about STAR that yourself and Jen obviously put out a children's book about STAR and helping children overcome adversity and that sort of thing. And that's what it's designed to do. So people can find that on Amazon. But we're really looking forward to your book coming out, Charlie. And I can't wait to read it. And I think you're an amazing man. And I think your fasting journey is amazing. And I think you're going to go on and help a lot of people. So thank you for joining me here on the Fasting Highway.
Thank you, Graham. And thank you for bringing up that children's book, because that's got a powerful message in it. I'm a STAR, and it's on Amazon. And that has a powerful message for both adults and kids. Get it. Kids get it immediately. The adults need to get it more. But thank you for bringing that up.
Okay, Charlie, you have a great day, and say hello to Jen for me.
Thank you. Bye now.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Oh, thank you so much, Charlie. Thoroughly enjoyed that chat with you, and it was great to catch up with you again. And anybody that wants to go back and listen to Charlie's original story on the podcast, you can go all the way back to episode 7 to do that. And once again, Charlie, thank you for sharing everything. Thank you for being so open and honest about your journey. I find you a very inspiring and motivating person, so thank you. Anyway, folks, also as mentioned there in the podcast, if you are interested in my own story, you'll find that in my book, The Fasting Highway, which is available on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle. If you do also want to get some motivation and inspiration from our Facebook group, The Fasting Highway, please come and join us. We'd love to have you there. Anyway, folks, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.